It's Thursday, the 12th of September, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, another twist in Britain's Brexit saga, as a court rules that Boris Johnson's suspension of Parliament is unlawful.
Each opinion expresses the view that the advice given by the government to Her Majesty the Queen to prorogue Parliament from 9th September to 14th October was unlawful, and that therefore the prorogation itself is unlawful.
Plus, Turkey embarks on a radical plan to resettle refugees in special Syrian territory controlled by the United States and its allies. Italy offers cash incentives to attract new business to its underpopulated regions. And our Hong Kong bureau looks at why, even amid ongoing protests, the city's vibrant festivals must go on. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Britain's rocky road to Brexit took another stunning twist yesterday when Scotland's highest civil court ruled that the suspension of Parliament this week is unlawful. Vincent McAvinney is Westminster correspondent for Euronews. Vinny, what's been the reaction to this?
Well, the government has acknowledged the case and says it plans to appeal against this decision, which didn't come with any order. Because there is a case waiting in the Supreme Court, which is meant to start next Tuesday. So the government has acknowledged the decision, but they think that the Supreme Court will side with them. But the reaction from the opposition has been firm. The Labour Shadow Attorney General, Shami Chakrabarty, said that Boris Johnson has led a life of privilege, but he needs to understand that he is not above the law. They are saying that it is an elitist prorogation of Parliament. And I think for the Prime Minister, it is another embarrassment, another blow, because the words of the judges are quite firm, saying that this was trying to restrict Parliament to avoid scrutiny, that the Queen was potentially misled. These three judges were unanimous. So it remains to be seen how damaging this will be, whether the judges next week in the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the United Kingdom, will take notice of this judgment or not.
And of course, Vinny, the prorogation of Parliament started this week. What could this ruling mean for that ongoing suspension?
Well, I mean, if the government loses next week, we'll be in an interesting situation because Parliament is normally prorogued for 3 weeks starting next Monday anyway, because it is the party conference season. So the Lib Dems are up first, the SNP have theirs, Labour's the following week, and the Conservatives of the week after that. So if the government loses, it'll be interesting to see whether straight after the Conservative Party conference, the opposition benches demand that Parliament is reopened straight away and they go right back into session. And then we will see whether or not they might decide to bring a vote of confidence in the Prime Minister or not. They've all said they will not allow a vote to go through on another election until after the October 31st deadline. The other timetabling, the 17th of October, is the EU Council meeting where they want Boris to have to, if he hasn't got a deal, after that point, they think he'll have to get this extension. So it just means that they'll be able to get more scrutiny on the government. They won a vote the other night to get some of the electronic communications of the government and the Yellowhammer document about no deal. But it's kind of hard for them to really force that through unless Parliament is sitting.
Vincent McAvinney, it is a twisted tale. We'll continue following it. Thank you. Syrian refugees in Turkey are being sent to the border as part of a radical new plan that could see them resettled in special Syrian territory controlled by the United States and its Kurdish allies. Ayla Jean Yakli is a journalist based in Istanbul.
There are people that are literally being brought back to the border, oftentimes to Idlib, which is an area that's under siege by Russian and Syrian government bombardment. There's also a couple of large areas within Syria that Turkey controls further to the east. And it's also encouraging and sometimes very much helping people go back to those areas. And this is aimed at diffusing public discontent with the number of refugees who are in Turkey. Turkey is the world's largest host of refugees, and there's 3.6 million Syrians who are sheltering here. Officially, the government denies that it's forcibly exiling anybody, that it's expelling anyone back to dangerous zones. It says that everyone that they take back has signed a consent form. However, rights groups, as well as refugees themselves, have talked about the fact that they've been picked up, detained for not having the appropriate papers. Let's say they weren't supposed to be living in Istanbul, and yet they were. They have been, they say, forcibly sent back. And the border crossing figures within that area of Idlib do show a large large increase. But there is also, as I said, this domestic pressure. Erdogan does feel that he needs to do something to address how unhappy people are. And that coincides with a slowing economy in Turkey. People are blaming Syrians for the lack of jobs and are upset that they get benefits, things that until recently they were very supportive of, which differentiated Turkey from much of the world where there is an anti-refugee and anti-migrant sentiment. Erdogan has said that he wants to create a new area within Syria, so separate from the areas that Turkey already does control after two previous military incursions. He wants to do this in northeastern Syria, which is dominated by a Kurdish militia and Kurdish political actors. And it says not only does it need to do this to relieve the pressure that Turkey feels from hosting so many refugees, but it very much seems to see these people as a potential buffer with the Kurds. Erdogan said this week that he'd like to relocate up to 1 million Syrian refugees to this area, and that would very dramatically change the demographics because most of the refugees within Turkey are Sunni Arabs, and this is an area that's largely Kurdish, although mixed. I mean, there are Arab cities as well as Christian areas too. So this is what Erdogan is envisioning. Whether he's actually able to do this seems extremely difficult. For one thing, the United States still has about 1,000 special forces in that area working with the Kurdish militia with whom it fought against Islamic State. And the idea that the United States could allow this transportation of 1 million refugees, many of whom don't want to go there, this isn't their home, they're not from that area, seems extremely difficult.
To Italy now, where a bold new plan could see startups flocking to the country.
The underpopulated southern Italian region of Molise has come up with a novel scheme to lure in investment. The new active residency allowance will offer newcomers 700 euros per month for 3 years to settle in one of its towns of under 2,000 residents for at least 5 years and launch a business there. That's a sum of about 25,000 euros. The rural region of 305,000 has lost more than 9,000 inhabitants over the past 5 years and is eager to bring people back. Whether this will prove a successful and sustainable plan to revive the region will have to be seen. But considering that Italy is the only major European economy whose population is expected to decline further in the next 5 years, it's definitely worth a try.
And finally today, a dispatch from the team at Monocle's Hong Kong Bureau on why the show must go on.
Hong Kong's Tai Hang neighbourhood will be kicking off tonight with its narrow streets full of screaming, smoke, loud bangs, banners and huge crowds. It's going to be a riot. But there's no reason for alarm. The city is about to celebrate the Mid-Autumn or Mooncake Festival, and Tai Hang's Fire Dragon procession is one of the highlights. 3 nights of parades, hundreds of performers, thousands of incense sticks, and far, far too many firecrackers. It's easy to forget amidst the ongoing anti-government protests that life goes on as normal for most people. Families will gather for a festive meal and try to avoid talking about politics. The city isn't on permanent lockdown, far from it, although anyone watching events unfold from afar could be excused for thinking so. In fact, even living here can feel like an alternative reality. Locals were taken aback one Sunday morning to spot a Dantean inferno on the cover of a newspaper, accompanied by the headline, "The Night the City Burned." Sure, it was certainly hot outside the 7-Eleven, but nothing that a dollop of Factor 50 couldn't fix. Protesters have been lighting a few fires recently. Yes, it's a worrying escalation, but it's also important to maintain some perspective. Hong Kong is still a safe city, and the protesters are well behaved. A reminder of this came yesterday, when a designer over on assignment from the UK was caught up in protests on her way home. She was helpfully handed a face mask and given alternative directions. She said she still feels comfortable walking alone at night in Hong Kong, far more so than in London. When the smoke clears in Tai Hang, attendance at this year's Fire Dragon Parade will almost certainly be down. Hong Kong has seen a 40% drop in tourists, but the show and the city will go on. The Fire Dragon Dance originally began as a way of warding off bad luck. Hong Kong could use some good fortune right now.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Ryland. The Monocle Minute returns on Friday.